land in that one again.
My war is coming at him now. Oh, there you go.
Right hand by Roy.
That hurt him.
Hardest cut to the fight. Wobbles Kovalev.
Man, I told you he was weak, Jim. You see in his legs, he's done this fight.
Kovalev holding on.
Put up in two different ways. Punch in between.
Another knockdown score with a vicious body shot.
It's all right saying it, but it's another thing doing it. If you feel it,
from Anthony Joshua, and Vladimir Klitschko took it. But Joshua's going for a big left hand, and down goes the giant Ukrainian in the same round that he lost his unbeaten record to Ross Purity. And can he get through it? A minute and a half.
Does this mic work? Well, then fuck that mic. On the count of three, I want everyone in this arena to scream at the top of your lungs, fuck the Mayweathers! Fuck Showtime too, you little weasel! Look at you, you little fucking weasel, I can see it in your eyes. You're a fucking bitch. Cut my mic off! Cut the champ's mic off! Hell no! You fucking weasel, and you fucking bitch!
But again, we're talking about Ivan's first pro boxing fight.
Here in round 10 against Floyd Mayweather! It's Floyd Mayweather landing the right hands now at will and tags McGregor again! Floyd Mayweather has McGregor on the ropes, literally and figuratively! How is the notorious one still standing?
That's it.
I just want to take a few seconds before the podcast starts to thank each and every subscriber, listener, calendar subscriber, person who reads articles, person who's in the chat with us. I want to thank you guys. You guys have made 2017 a great year for us. We got a good year, or a big year at least, planned for 2018. And I also want to thank the contributors to all the things that we do. Leo, Tom, Gleb, Babs, Jason, Simon, Rajiv, Hova, Graham, Chris, Josh, Tweed, and T-Baby. Thank you so much to all of you guys. Thank you again to all the people who are listening to this or have made this possible. We got a big year planned next year, and I hope you guys are here with us. So let's get the podcast started. First podcast of the year, Simon is back. And Simon, why don't you tell everybody why you haven't been on the podcast?
You just stopped inviting me, really.
That's like, not true.
I've been sat around just twiddling my thumbs.
That's not true. You know what Simon's been doing? Building cribs.
Yeah, that's true. I have been.
Simon's going to have a baby.
Yeah, due in April, my first.
And so I was asking Simon before the podcast, let's assume, because this is how life works, if the baby's going to be in April and Joshua, Simon's favorite fighter, is going to be fighting Joseph Parker in April, let's assume that Joshua's making his ring walk. The AJ letters are ablaze. Joseph Parker's in the ring sweating already because he knows he's about to get knocked out. The baby is coming. Your wife says, like, hey, you need to take me to the hospital. What do you do?
Call a cab and catch up a little bit later. I think it's important that you have your priorities in life. And like, I know where mine are.
As one of the proud members of the AJ Massive.
Yeah, like, you know, that fight's a once-in-a-lifetime event, ultimately. You know, you're not going to be able to relive that afterwards, so.
It's true. How frequently do you see domestic Australians win world titles?
Nationality aside, that's right. It's going to be an interesting one, and a brief one, I think.
Let me just say this before Graham gets really mad at me. Joseph Parker is not Australian. He's from New Zealand.
That's right.
Whatever.
Whatever.
So we're going to, what this podcast is we're going to do our, basically our awards of the year in a brief recap of the year, which will take 3 hours probably. And we're going to start with Fighter of the Year, which is the most natural place to start. Simon, do you want to go first? It's been a while since you've been on the podcast, so I'll let you talk.
Yeah. So I think that there's been a lot of achievements. Like, it's been a really good year all round, and so a lot of people have done stuff. For my pick for Fighter of the Year, I'm going to put it with Andre Ward for kind of cementing his legacy in a good way. Like, I think that he climbed the highest mountain that he had available to him, and, you know, did it without too much of an issue, and has gone off on a high note. And that's, you know, assuming he doesn't come back, I think that that's a really good career. Loads of great wins, and I think this year was another keynote milestone for him.
What do you think this morning of the news that Carl Froch said Dimitri Bivol forced Andre Ward to retire?
I didn't see that. Is that a genuine comment? Or are you making that up?
Because no, this is true.
I really can't tell.
No, I'm not quoting some fanboy on the sub or in the chat. This is legit. It was on Boxing Scene.
I don't know. I mean, I think with Carl, he's obviously had a great career, made a load of fans, and I think in some ways he might miss being the action, and so he'll often comment on stuff, especially where Ward's concerned, to kind of keep his hat in the ring and like stay relevant to the public conversation. But the problem with doing that is that you're not always necessarily saying good stuff, and that's an example of not good stuff, because that's very silly.
Right, and it kind of hurts his case because Ward beat him, and then you're saying that the guy who's scared of this other young fighter and forced himself to retire is also the guy that beat me. Like, that's stupid. Not that I disagree. I like the pick of Ward, and you definitely can say that he reached a point this year, and what he did in a single event was far greater than what most other guys have done. I have three picks for Fighter of the Year.
And that's just greedy.
No. I have one pick and then two guys, one runner-up, and then one is the Fighter of the Year based off of a different set of parameters. So, like, first, like, normal, just what you did, the Fighter of the Year, like, who reached the highest heights, who accomplished the most in 2017 and really took themselves to the next level and stood head and shoulders above the competition. And for me, that was Terrence Crawford. And I thought this was kind of obvious. He arguably beat two of the best guys that he could have beat in his division, in Felix Diaz and Julius Ndongo. Ndongo, a unified champion, and Diaz was a guy that many people thought was the best opposition that he could face at the time. I mean, everyone was excited that he was going to come over from PBC, fight on HBO, and, you know, what he did is ended up just the same way everyone else does. I mean, it was almost like, how different was Diaz in that fight to John Molina? What Crawford did to him was unbelievable. And then he goes and stops Julius Ndongo to make history in unifying a division. And it's not something that we see happen every year. So that alone, I think, suffers though is that
the public haven't really got behind a lot of the names involved there on either side. And so on paper, academically, 100% worthy of consideration. But it's not a big, like, you said people were excited. I don't know if, like, the general public were excited. It was more of a, like, a boxing fans, like, a fans fight rather than, like, a for the public fight, if that makes sense.
Right. And I think, yeah, you could definitely say that Crawford didn't cross any lines, especially in the way that Ward did. You know, he made history, but he didn't have a win that was just as impactful on the whole boxing community, world, whatever you want to say, that Ward did. And, you know, the thing that kept me from picking Ward was that he... just the controversy. If it was a little cleaner, and in my opinion, it was a clean stoppage. There's no controversy with me, but I can't.
Yeah,
go fully because I don't want to hear his haters come after me.
No, I get that. Like, sometimes you just have to go with your heart, though. My heart said that he had a great year, and there's definitely people that had their problems with the result of that fight. But I don't care about those people because they're wrong.
Well, and then you also just don't come on the podcast enough, so you don't have to hear them in the comments every week.
I can hide out, and I don't have to endure.
I'm going to make you be the host, and then you can just, you know, deal with the messages.
That's poison chalice right there.
My runner-up, and I think this one's obvious who's going to be the runner-up. if it's not Ward, and Crawford's already been taken. It's Srisakit Sorungvisai. So he decisions the pound for pound, at least the consensus pound for pound number one fighter, according to many. And then in a rematch, he decides, I'll beat you even more conclusively, and he knocks him out in one of the most brutal knockouts we saw of the year. I mean, it's rare that we see, in my opinion, a guy fight another guy, especially a guy that is considered better than him, and basically say, oh, you know, you fight me. Yeah, it looks like you're about to be shot, doesn't it? You're definitely, he takes a fighter's prime away. And then he came back and erased all doubt and made sure that everyone left that fight with basically the opinion that Roman Gonzalez is done. There's nothing left there. He's cooked. And that was all at the hands of Sorungvisai. I think if we look at which fighter climbed the most as far as rankings go, it would have to be Rungvisai. I mean, who thought about him at the end of 2016? Would he have made a top 50 list in boxing?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And in their first fight, I scored it for Gonzalez by a point, if I remember correctly. And so I had it as a close, narrow win for Gonzalez.
If you scored for Gonzalez by a point, you would have to have had it 114-113?
I think so. I think that's how I had it. I'd need to go and look at my notes. What I remember is I had it as like the thinnest margin for Gonzalez you could have had, but still for Gonzalez. And so I thought that he won, and in the rematch, it would be a chance for him to do a better job of things to try and get the outcome he wanted. And it was just so definitive in the opposite direction that it was like, no, fair enough. Like, you know, I had my doubts after the first one, but you know, what can you say to the second one? It was just a complete, it was thorough, and you couldn't really say anything like to discredit it at that point.
I mean, the conversation heading into that fight was that Gonzalez would break the record of Mayweather after, you know, going more than 50-0. The reason why he's not number one is, one, he didn't make history quite like the way Crawford did, but also I lost my train of thought, but I just decided to look at Rungvisai's career to find out who he had beat, but what I'll say is Rungvisai grew the most Nobody predicted that Rungvisai was going to beat Gonzalez first time around.
Certainly not first time around. And second time around, I didn't think he was going to win, and especially not in that style.
And that's the whole thing about it, is that not only did he win, but also he did it in such a way. I mean, there's knocking a guy out, which is fine, and we see knockouts all the time. But this is a different type of knockout that he scored over Gonzalez. I mean, Gonzalez looked done. He left no doubt.
Picked apart. That's right. It wasn't a flash, like, lucky shot. It was just clinical.
Yeah, and I mean, just beat the fight out of him. So that's what I'll give the runner-up to Rungvisai. And then my other fighter of the year.
Yeah, so what are these weird conditions you said about? You said you were going to do it by unconventional measures. So what are they?
So first of all, we had that, which is like in the typical traditional way. Now, the other parameters, like who basically elevated boxing? Who didn't have to do it in the ring? That whether they won or lost in the fight, they had elevated boxing, brought enough attention, and just created a spectacle. And naturally, that's Floyd Mayweather. Coming back, show that he owns the sport. I mean, this is a year that Canelo, the biggest draw in boxing, fought the most revered, loved, etc. Getting text messages complaining. Josh is complaining that Gleb in the chat is talking trash about Jason. So anyway,
where is Jason?
Jason is in Connecticut.
Yeah, I know, but like, where is he? I haven't been on with him in literally all of this year, I don't think.
Jason hasn't been on like much either. Like, he was, and then one, he got mad at Gleb because Gleb is weird, and then and he's just been very busy. He's like in a master's program and trying to be like a father and all that stuff. So
doing all life stuff.
Yeah, so he's having a life, which I tell him he doesn't have all the time. But anyway, Mayweather came back. I mean, if you really look at it, like, this guy set history. You have a year where Canelo fights Golovkin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it did a massive number. And still, it was paled in comparison to what Floyd did by coming back, picking the right opponent, and, you know, a guy that had no chance, and somehow convinced most of the world, at least enough that they nearly break the pay-per-view record, that he could lose a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And made it look competitive for like a round before basically systematically and just clinically destroying Conor McGregor. I mean, what a way to come back into boxing, a sideshow event, and still putting up the numbers that they put up. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And some credit needs to be given to Floyd. And I mean, Jesus, he took the ball from Oscar when he beat him in 2009 or 8 or whatever. 7 maybe, not can't even remember, but I mean, he just continues to rewrite what you can do and what's possible as a boxer who's capable of getting people to tune in.
Yeah,
and unfortunately,
I particularly liked that event. Sometimes the online reaction doesn't go the way that you think it should, or I think it should anyway. But with that fight, as soon as it ended, there was a big surge of people saying that it was fixed and that the referee saved Floyd from a fight he was losing clearly. And what I was happy about was that, rightly so, everyone told those people that they're idiots. And
yeah,
that argument got shut down the same day. And then there came back a new argument, which was it was a very close fight that Mayweather won by being a genius. And even that got shut down as like, it wasn't close. It was fun, but it wasn't close.
Yeah, I mean, you thought it was close maybe if you watch MMA your whole life. One of the other things is that what fight in history or fighter in history has ever been able to unify the entire sport? Like, all boxing fans stood together for one day to cheer on Floyd and see the MMA fans disappointed. I mean, it was just the best. I can't think of a better period that we've had in boxing that was as fun. I mean, it was really annoying to deal with the McGregor fanboys, but other than that, like, it was just a really fun time to be a boxing fan and have everybody asking you about what McGregor's chances are in the boxing ring against Floyd and bringing up McGregor's left and his angles and all that nonsense that ultimately meant nothing in the end.
Yeah. So, I think one thing, so there's like certain trends within the boxing community, and I did a piece a while ago on how fans love to say that boxing's dying or dead, even though it's not. But another one, people are really slow to give credit to anything that's happening today. And I think that Floyd's one of those fighters that people struggle to give a thumbs up to in the here and now. And you get people that are like, oh, he's okay, but he's no, and then they'll list an obscure champion from the 60s. Like, oh, that was a real fighter. But I think that in 20 years' time, people are going to be bringing up Floyd the same way people bring up, like, Ali as, like, you know, accomplished fighters. It's just the sport really struggles to give people their dues while they're actually fighting.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think a lot of people also have a lot of trouble separating what Floyd is capable of doing in the ring versus what he's capable of doing on Instagram and stuff. And when that disappears and people forget, you know, Floyd's all his antics and is out of the ring stuff, people are going to realize, wow, that was I got to see that talent. I mean, just think about this, you know, right now, Crawford, in 30 years time, you're going to say you were able to see Crawford in his prime. And
I don't know. That's assuming a certain arc. But yeah, I don't think that's a crazy prediction.
Right. I think it's one of the safest ones we can make right now, is that Crawford is that guy. And, you know, just to see, like, to really, I mean, I always encourage people, like, you know, just appreciate what you're seeing. Like, Crawford is unbelievable. Look at the adjustments he's made. Like, just think, count the amount of guys who've won rounds against him and what it's really taken. Like, you have to be Gamboa throwing a lightning quick jab to win a round against Crawford.
Mm.
So that's the fighter of the year. Let's talk about the fight of the year. What did you have?
I don't think that there's really a contest here. I think fight of the year is Klitschko AJ.
Oh, we disagree. So
look at it this way. You've got the decades-long reigning king who obviously has his loss to Fury, but it wasn't a compelling loss in the sense that it wasn't like Roman Gonzalez's most recent loss, where it was destructive. It was someone.
Did he lose anything?
He got outfoxed by Fury, and that's, you know, so it wasn't like the end of an era. It was fair enough, you've outfoxed him. But with the AJ fight, it was like the story all worked. You had the old reigning champ and the new, you know, young up and comer. You had like knockdowns in both directions. You had, you know, epic flow to the fight where it was, you know, difficult at any moment to know who was going to win. I had Klitschko ahead going into the final round, and a lot of people did other than the judges. So it was a really close back and forth fight, knockdowns in both directions, electric, did huge numbers, was super important. I had my whole family round watching it, and that's rare where there's, you know, my in-laws and that are interested in a fight, which is always a nice treat. But yeah, it was the most important fight, I think, for history, for entertainment's fact. Like, I'd be interested to know how you can disagree with that one.
It's not that I disagree. It was certainly a great fight. But I think that Canelo Golovkin wins it for me.
See, it was momentous, but I think that the reaction spoiled it. Fans being upset about the result spoiled it, in my opinion.
I'll give you that, because it is annoying to this day to see the amount of debate that we deal with in the chat on a daily freaking basis of who won that fight and why, you know, even if people who thought Canelo won, the 118-110 card is ridiculous, which we'll get to later. For me, that they just had the greatest display of skill.
Yeah,
of
it was fight. A high skill event, and a draw is perfectly okay in my book.
And otherwise, I actually thought that this was a weak year for like fight of the year contenders. Like usually, we have like 5 or 6, 7 fights that it, like, without a doubt, these were absolute wars.
Yeah, I think that this year was full of whoopings though, where people got whooped. You know, they went into fights that were on paper very close, and they just got whooped. And so it wasn't like the way that boxing works in terms of its fan appeal is there's story arcs of there's things like comebacks, there's things like underdogs, there's things like reigning champs that are invincible, and they all have a different place in time. You can't have all the parts of the story happening at once. And this year was big for the ends of stories of people who've been going on for ages and have finally ended their careers or been beaten in such a dramatic fashion that they're... So it means that there's a vacuum at the moment for new stories to begin.
Yeah.
So we've had a year that was very conclusive, but the problem with conclusions is, especially in boxing, they're often not... dramatic fights in the sense of the action. They're dramatic in what they mean. So Gonzalez getting absolutely whooped, it wasn't a dramatic fight in what happened, but it was dramatic in what it means for that division and for him and the power vacuum it leaves for, you know, someone else to fill the gap. So this year's had so much passing of the torch and dramatic implications, but not necessarily dramatic fights, and that's fine. There, you know, there's a time for both. But I think with AJ Klitschko, there was that dramatic fight, and I think that with Canelo Golovkin, that's a good pick as well. It's not my pick, but so there was definitely some like epic wars, but it was light on that because there was so much torch passing going on.
Yeah, I mean, the other difference is like I was there for Canelo Golovkin, so it's a bit different to see these guys fighting. But for me, I mean, it had what I like to see. You had two very different styles, and you had both guys executing at an extremely high level. The risk, I mean, there was risk in every shot that was thrown. I mean, how many times did Canelo land shots that should have probably put away lesser opposition? Golovkin less so, because he worked a more of a methodical, less of a haymaker style in that fight where he landed more jabs and was a bit more traditional with what he was doing. But still, we've seen guys fall to Golovkin with that kind of style as well. I mean, David Lemieux, you know, actually, David Lemieux had no answers, but it seems David Lemieux has very few answers in this sport at the moment. So that was my fight of the year. But I agree, there wasn't that many. There were some good wars, but for me, high skill tactical battles with action always outweigh just wars. You know, Rios Alvarado was the same year as Pacquiao Marquez IV, and I think Pacquiao Marquez IV was far and away a better fight than that.
Yeah, and the test of time is going to agree with you.
I mean, you seriously, there's wars that happen that are just pure slugfests every year, every month probably.
Yeah, you can look on the undercards at like kind of local level fights, and there's often really interesting scraps that happen because the talent might not be super high, but it's paired with the right person who's also on a similar skill level, and it creates a war where there isn't necessarily any right to be.
Yeah, and you're right about this is a year of a lot of ends. You know, we saw a lot of people retire. We basically saw a lot of guys who've been
by
reigning
choice
for a long
or
time.
Otherwise.
Yeah, a lot of guys who've been reigning for a long time take losses. You know, Manny Pacquiao took a loss. Klitschko took a loss. Bradley's done. Cotto took a loss. Like, a lot of these guys who've been names for a really long time, they're done. They're probably leaving the sport, and and next year we'll see the emergence of a lot of new stars in the sport, I believe.
Yeah, there's a gap for it. That's the only thing that ever happens, is that stars rise, they fall, and new stars take their place.
Let's move on. So what were your best either memories, moments? Well, actually, I think I have the longer list, so I should go, and then you can add in yours.
All right, go on then.
So these are basically like the best things that I'll remember from this year, basically. Mm-hmm. So, and there's no order, so I didn't rank these, so don't think that just because I'm saying something first.
These are just noteworthy.
Okay, so Jeff Horn, the decision being announced that Jeff Horn won. Like, I am still in the Manny Won camp, okay? And maybe I have a little bit of Manny fanboy left over from, you know, 2005, but I don't care. I thought Manny won the fight. I still think he got the raw deal. Do I think he beats Jeff Horn in a rematch? I don't know. Do I think Manny should probably just retire? Yes. But if he can get the McGregor fight, I'd go for that.
So with that fight, I scored it for Manny.
No, and you scored it for Jeff Horn. You had it 117 to 111.
I did not. This is a lie. But I can't say that Pacquiao won it. He left room for the judges to do that. And that, you know, so raw deal, yes. But he didn't perform nearly as well as he should have. He made a lot of mistakes in that fight. And he is to blame in part for that loss because he didn't do enough.
You know, here's why I think, at least for me, if I'm trying to like objectively say, okay, well, why don't I feel that same way? And I think part of it is Manny did a lot of things that reminded you of the old Manny. Like, he still had the stutter step, left hand straight, and he landed it a few times. Like, he did all the things that he normally does in fights.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also a lot of things that, you know, he got hit a lot. He was bullied at times.
It sounds like you agree with me there, then.
In hindsight, yes. But in the moment, I was like, I don't see how Horn won this fight. Like, I didn't even think it was close.
Did you go full Teddy Atlas about how there needs to be an investigation?
No, I didn't. Because I don't care that much. Like, we see robberies, at least, or decisions that you don't agree with on the regular. It just happens in boxing. Like, it's going to happen in any sport where you're saying your opinion is what will determine the outcome of who wins.
Yeah, this is it. And robberies do happen, don't get me wrong. There's a bunch. However, I don't consider this one of them.
No, I think at the end of the day, I can say, okay, maybe it was close and they favored something different. And the optics, I'm sure the optics look way different in person than on TV. Because on TV, the size difference didn't look that big, but as I was, you know, I was looking at it a little closer, looking at the highlights, rewatching the clip where Manny gets wobbled, and it's like, okay, maybe Horn just looked massive, like he was just tossing Manny around in there.
Mm.
And that could happen. So I'm not saying that, I'm definitely not saying that Jeff Horn didn't win that fight, but I'm saying the shock of Horn getting announced the winner and literally everyone looking mm-hmm. around confused. And I watched that with a bunch of people. It was one of the top moments of the year for me.
Yeah, no, that was big, yeah.
Another one, I'm sure this is going to be probably the one that most people roll their eyes about, but I don't care, is Diego De La Hoya outclassing Randy Caballero on the Canelo Golovkin undercard. This mm-hmm. is a guy who I thought was like just not really a good prospect, you know?
You weren't sold.
And I was really impressed with what he did. I mean, I was certain that he was going to win that fight, Caballero, and do it easily. And what De La Hoya did just shocked me, and just seeing him emerge as one of the top prospects in the sport. Unfortunately, he had to miss weight by like 4 pounds and not follow it up with anything. But otherwise, it was just a great emergence of a prospect.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think that that's that big, but if you want to give it a note, then by all means.
Let's see. Klitschko dropping Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
That was one of the top moments of like, oh my God, Klitschko still got it. I mean, Klitschko looked good in the fight, but like you kind of had the sense that while he was outboxing Joshua, if Joshua really put it together, Joshua was going to, you know, knock him out. And then Joshua did come out aggressive, and then Klitschko drops him. It was a wild, you know, just one of the moments in a really wild fight.
Yeah, it had echoes of his fight with Dillian White, where he'd felt that he had some success and then went to his corner for his break and came back out, not realizing that the other person has had time to recover too, and came out too hard, too strong, too fast, and made a mistake and paid for it. And the same thing happened in both of those fights, which is a little troubling, but in terms of the action, it was incredible.
The next one is, and this is like another one that's probably just exclusive to me, and maybe some people will roll their eyes, but seeing Luke Campbell fight live. I've been a fan of Luke and watching
his whole
career.
Yeah, that
was a
really good performance. He won a lot of fans that night.
Yeah, not only just seeing him, that he looks much older than he looks.
Is that right?
Yeah, he does. But then also seeing him look like he was outclassed early, and then come back and nearly beat Jorge Linares. I still think Linares won pretty clearly, but it was just...
He did that tough trick, though, where you lose a fight pretty conclusively, but everyone's a fan and thinks you did really well. Like, it doesn't happen often, but sometimes people are able to take a loss that somehow elevates their position in people's minds. And that was one of those examples where, even though he got beat, because of how he approached it and what he was able to do and show off, lots of people who weren't fans before became fans, and lots of people who were going off the idea of him as a world-level fighter are starting to warm to it again.
And that leads us into our next one.
Take it. Hey, Adrian, congratulations, man. Congratulations. I know it's not what you want, but thank you for being here.
Good fight, but we all know I won that fight, man. That was
good fun. Job. Good job.
Nothing beats the saltiness of that interview after the fight, after Adrian Granados loses probably 8 rounds, maybe 9, to Sean Porter. And what was it, a really tough fight to watch, because Porter's style is just rough to watch. But Granados,
that's nothing new, though.
Delivering a fairly salty post-fight interview. It's just, I don't know, it's one of the best memes of the year, I think.
Yeah.
Another Clarissa Shields trainer. You probably didn't watch this fight. Did you? No?
I don't think so. I'm trying to summon it.
When she won her world title, and she's just lighting up the girl that she's fighting, and her trainer in this corner says, look, I don't want to say she's a bum, but she's a bum. and then I have three moments of like a fighter getting hurt. The number one moment that was just like the most unexpected, wildest, shocking moment of the year. Number one, when Ward landed that right hand on Kovalev. I mean, nobody expected that Ward was going to hurt Kovalev. And that right hand was just the punch of the year. Number two is the Ali Cotto round one. When Ali hit someone with the right hand, like a split second passes, and then you realize, oh wow, Cotto's hurt. Like, and he starts wobbling all over the place. And then number three, just in general, round one of Thurman Garcia, which might be one of the wildest rounds of the year, where Thurman and Garcia are just both going for it, and Garcia gets wobbled. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who has looked like basically he can be a punching bag if he needs to, but you're not going to hurt him. And here we see Garcia just pretty badly hurt and changed the whole dynamic of how that fight was going to play out.
Yeah.
The opposite of that, Danny Jacobs taking that shot from Golovkin, slapping his gloves together and screaming at him, is one of the coolest moments of the year, to finally see somebody stand up to Golovkin.
Yeah, I thought that was a great fight. I hope that he stays in people's minds. Like, I hope that he isn't instantly forgotten, because that was a very close fight that you could have even scored for him.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And then also, you don't think that Eddie Hearn's going to let him fade from anybody's minds, do you?
I hope not, but it's not always up to Eddie.
It is up to Eddie.
Fair enough.
He runs boxing. And then Jermall Charlo's post-fight interview, even though Jermall Charlo was the one who was fighting, after he knocked out Lubin, I think Charlo's post-fight interview, Jermall, was just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. A lot of emotion, I guess. There was that one wasn't just a boxing match.
Is you okay? Let's see. I would play the clip. I have the clip, but it's like 2 minutes long. Maybe we'll play it at the end. Okay, were there any moments that you had that I didn't have?
I think so, because mine aren't, like, I don't think I'm using the same criteria as you. My first one that's, like, not too controversial was the Errol Spence's fight with Brooke.
What about it? Because I didn't have it. I love Spence.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, Brooke had, from beating Porter, been on this kind of mystery level of world contention where it's like he could be the best welterweight in the world, because he's only fought one person that kind of could give him that reputation, and it was a sketchy one. But, you know, not fighting anyone doesn't mean that you're bad or good. It means we don't know. And his loss against Golovkin didn't really answer any questions, because it was super one-sided from the beginning to the end.
But to British people. Well, Brooke was winning.
This is the point. And so with this fight, it was an even matchup in terms of, like, you couldn't say it was an unfair... in skill set, it wasn't balanced. But in terms of reputation and career trajectory, they matched. And it was one-sided, clinical, and, you know, definitive. And so it put to bed all of the stories about Brooke, and that's why it hit my list.
Okay, no, I got no problems with that. I didn't put it because I thought that was an incredibly predictable fight. So
yeah, absolutely. It's just that the predictability wasn't something that there was a mass agreement on.
Yeah, I mean, but that's every British fight, or every fight featuring a British fighter.
And on British fighters, another one that I gave notes was the Bellew David Hay fight, because when Hay's leg goes, it was so shocking. It was, because I think that most of us that were watching that know kind of what we're looking at, knew immediately that something was up before any of it really. You just knew that his footwork was sketchy, and you're like, I think he's hurt his leg. And it became more and more obvious that there was a really big problem. And it's one of those unusual things that's in a fairly high-profile fight that a lot of people are watching, that something that sketchy's happened, and the fight's continued for ages. Usually that would be the end of it,
yeah.
But it kept going, and you're just thinking... And then Hayes, like, doing this thing where he's just refusing to move because he can't put any weight down, and he's just throwing these absolutely reckless, like, huge punches. But because Bellew's not particularly defensive or mobile, they're nearly landing, and you're just like... he might win with one leg. I just don't even, how is it? Like, it was really difficult to understand what was going to happen, because it's like, if Hay connects with anything, he might just win by stoppage.
Right.
And Bellew's letting that nearly happen repeatedly.
I think he did win a round. Like, maybe the only time in boxing history, somebody has won a round with a torn Achilles.
Yeah. It was just, I'm not saying like it's a fight of the year contender or anything, but that was weird, and you'll remember that forever.
Yeah, it was certainly one of the weirdest fights of the year.
And then on weird outcomes, my other moment I got noted down, it's not even a fight per se, it's the response to a fight, and it was Teddy Atlas on television calling for Adelaide Bird to be arrested before she's able to leave Las Vegas for scoring the Golovkin Canelo fight a way that he didn't like.
Okay, but and that's actually ridiculous because she lives in Vegas, so she would never leave. So technically, she should still be like, the cops should still be waiting at the borders.
Yeah, it's stupid for so many reasons, but the bit that I like most about it is that it means that in Teddy Atlas's mind, when a fight is fixed, the judge involved is given a big bag that says money on it, and that if they're able to escape the zone with the money bag, then you got away with it. Like, it's just it's like a ridiculous movie plot. Rather, you know, I don't think that the fight was fixed. I think the score was kind of ridiculous, but I don't think that it was fraudulent or corrupt. But even if it were, I don't reckon she was like paid after the fight with a big suitcase that she could run away with. Like, presumably they'd do like direct deposit transfers, like, you know, or
to
or
an even offshore tried account, laundry. You know, like yeah, like proper U.S. politician scum.
Sophistication, not like this sketchy mustache villain, like ridiculous. So him saying on national television to arrest her before she leaves Las Vegas, that was special and ridiculously irresponsible.
Yeah, I that was just ridiculous, and it caps off an entire career that Teddy Atlas has made of stupid outbursts like that.
Yeah, and the thing is, it comes from a place of love. He clearly loves the sport and cares a lot, and that passion's admirable, but he channels that passion into being a sad, absurd figure.
I mean, yeah, he's passionate enough to pull a gun on Mike Tyson, so I guess.
He's a wild card, and I think that, like, if you want to say crazy opinions, go for it, but if your crazy opinions are arrest this person immediately because they're scoring
for making a mistake,
like, or even just having a different opinion or being mistaken, or like, you know, just it's just that was a leap.
Yeah, I think people were the outcry in that fight is just a little too much. But it just speaks to how much, I don't want to say passionate, but like, You basically took two sides of boxing, of like the two whiniest sides of boxing together, and obviously 118, 110 was a little biased towards Canelo.
It was a stupid decision. Like, let's be real, but she could have had it closer and the result be the same. Like, it was, and there were she's not the only judge that night either.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I forgive all bad judging, because you know what? If you didn't want the judges to be able to make a mistake, win by more rounds next time.
Yeah, and that was what we were saying about Pacquiao. You know, whilst the judges, it was a little unfair, you're responsible for not giving them room to do that. But the thing is, so that there was an immediate dumpster fire of a reaction when the scores got announced, and the internet was ablaze, and the press conference was ablaze. Everyone was on fire. And when there's that sort of flame, typically, if you're on television or you've got a voice that carries to a lot of people, you should really be using that position to try to bring some balance and sophistication to, you know, everyone's really angry, let's try and see things more charitably and see where we can go with this to try and make the mood a more productive one. And what Teddy did with that fire was just poured gasoline on it, like, which made things much worse.
It's like if the news, on the news, they're talking about like a fire or a shooter, and instead of them like saying, well, you know, just focusing on like the singular event, it's like, you know, stay in your house, fire can be anywhere, like, even though you're in a different state. It's just a little ridiculous.
And it's like, the emotion behind it, you know, it's if they lose their cool going on a rant about how there's been too many fires and fire needs to be stopped and that we shouldn't have fire anymore. And, you know, things that are just physically impossible.
Everyone should throw your ovens in the trash.
Yeah.
They, so, they,
it's going on. So that made my moments of the year, because I don't think I've ever heard someone be called for the arrest of a scorecard before.
Yeah, so let's move off of that. I don't want to spend too much time talking about Teddy Atlas, seeing as how we won't be hearing him anymore. I came up with a category for who was the fighter of the year who lost in 2016.
And that was a difficult one, and I've had to cheat to answer it.
So, say why you cheated and who you picked.
So, I picked Dylan White for losing to AJ and then winning with Chisora and kind of building himself.
Did he beat Chisora?
Well, yes, because that's what the score says. But my point is that a lot of people go up against AJ and immediately lose all esteem and like momentum. Well, not just that, the fans kind of throw him out in the bin, like, oh, I lost to AJ, see you later. But he's managed to climb back into public opinion, and when people are talking about good matchups, his name gets brought up a lot. The reason that I cheated, though, is because his AJ fight was actually the last few weeks of 2015, and his win against Chisora was the last few weeks of 2016. So I'm a few weeks out on both years.
Yeah.
But that was where my mind went. Even though I'm a few weeks out, is someone who took a loss that was a definitive loss and then has managed to build themselves back into the public space.
I mean, you could even say that the Chisora fight should be qualifying, because he nearly lost that fight, and I think that fight should have been a draw.
It could have easily been, yeah. It's just, I'm not even talking about the outcome now. I'm talking about how fans have responded to it. And he has avoided being thrown in the bin and instead is on a lot of people's lips for interesting matchups. So that's an achievement.
I would discredit that because the people who talk about Dillian White as being a relevant matchup for anybody, if it's not another domestic fighter he's fighting, you're just delusional, because Dillian White's not that good. And he has no business being in the ring with the Wilder, a Joshua, maybe Parker. But even then, I would easily favor Parker to beat him. I mean, I just don't think he's good. I shudder to think how foolish he would look if he got in the ring with a Tyson Fury.
For sure. I think the difference there is that with Parker, I'm not that sold on Parker either. So I think that's closer than you're giving that credit for being.
I think Parker could outwork him. For sure, but I'm not saying
for many rounds?
For seven.
Yeah, I think
that's all you need. Yeah, okay. That seems to be Parker's MO. Seven rounds of good fighting, and then he just coasts or
seven in the
looks
bag,
tired the other five. Yeah. I picked two. First is Leo Santa Cruz. So yeah, Simon disagreed with this one, because he says that Leo Santa Cruz didn't exactly lose to Carl Frampton.
I said it was a close one, and he lost, definitely. You know, I scored it. I called it for Frampton in advance and scored it for Frampton, so there's no disagreement there. It just wasn't he wasn't shut out or anything.
Now, the reason I say this, though, so, like, I have two, but the reason why I put Santa Cruz first is because while he did lose in 2016, there's no doubt about it, and I thought Frampton won the fight. I thought it was a close fight, but Frampton won, clearly. And no fighter has grown as much over the past year as Santa Cruz did, of guys that won in 2016 and lost in 2016. Nobody's made as big of a stride as Santa Cruz has done. Santa Cruz reinvented his entire style, and the way we got to see and get the confirmation of that is he fought the same guy. And the same guy fought pretty similarly to the way he did in the first fight. And Santa Cruz changed everything about his game plan. And just, I mean, he beat Frampton far more conclusively than Frampton beat him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a great litmus test. I think that is a great pick. It's better than my Dillian White pick. So well done. I can't say much more.
He followed it up with his fight against Chris Avalos, which... and then again, Santa Cruz changes the style up a bit to suit what his opponent, and, you know, he does get hit more than we usually see, but in the style that he's fighting in, you have to get hit, because he's now going after a guy trying to force a stoppage, and he does.
And I trusted that was calculated to an extent. Like, no one goes in like, I'm going to get punched in the face loads. But I think that sometimes people decide to take a more risky style that's going to be fan friendlier and going to work the way they want it to. So I think that it was a calculated risk he took in that fight rather than a sign of weakness or whatever.
And more importantly than all of that that we both said, you cannot rule out the effect of fighting in the StubHub Center.
Yeah, the magical war-creating StubHub Center.
You have two Mexican fighters fighting in the main event at StubHub.
Like, what is it about that location? Like, do you think it's the fans or do you think it's the structure itself?
It's both. So it's both. For those who've not been at the StubHub Center, okay, the way it's built, it feels like you're on top of the fighters.
It's you know, like ancient Roman gladiatorial like colosseums. It feels like one of those in my mind.
Yeah, it is, because like another part of it is that it's so close. You can hear every single fan yelling. Mm. Okay, so the guy in the very top row can yell out in a quiet moment of a fight, and everyone will hear him in the arena. And it's so close, the way the stadium seating is, everyone has a very good view of the ring. So like, and in the ring, because it's so small, you look out, you see faces, you know, in an arena like the Forum in Inglewood or in the Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas or the T-Mobile Arena, you look out and you see just a sea
of lights.
Of lights, of like blurry faces or whatever. But at StubHub, you look to the left and you see Simon. You look to the right and you see some, you know, one of your family members. There's no hiding from people in the StubHub Center. And I think with the people that close, there's just something about it. It just overtakes the fighters.
Most years, there's a fight of the year contender that happened there. And that's saying something.
And, I mean, next year, I can't remember which fight we're getting there, but already there's some wars on the table at StubHub. Mm. I mean, the Valdez Mariaga fight was also brutal. And that was last year. And then second place is Saddam Ali, stopped in 2016 by Jesse Vargas, comes back, wins a few fights, and then pulls one of the biggest upsets of the year in beating Miguel Cotto. Now Cotto was injured, but he was getting beat before the injury, so let's not act like that's any reason to take any credit away from Saddam Ali. So no, it's just a great comeback for him.
And you'll remember, I've been a Saddam Ali fan for a while. Like, I've been waving that flag, and I was upset at his loss. So it was really nice to see him get another shot at the top.
Yeah, he seems like a guy that, you know, if you listen to his interviews or anything like that, he's a guy that, it's nice to see him succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that he could have a really steady career ahead of him if everything's managed correctly, and I hope that he does.
Do you think he could beat Liam Smith?
Yeah, I do.
That's because you think Liam Smith isn't good, huh?
Kinda. Like, not. I don't mean no good, but like, there's levels, and I don't think they're on the same level.
Ooh. British fans right now just. They loved what you said about AJ, and now they're not feeling you.
I just lost everyone.
Oh, and Dillian White, too. They were like, wow, Simon's our guy. Then you have to go and disrespect Liam Smith.
I just got to call it as I see it, and I don't think that is on the same level.
Wait a second. You weren't impressed by Liam Smith's performance against Liam Williams?
No.
Okay.
No, not unimpressed. I just don't think it was that significant.
Who is your prediction for Fighter of the Year in 2018?
See, this is a really difficult one, and the reason is, so this year we've got lots of people saying that Fighter of the Year is Saw Rungvisai for his win over Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. But in 2016, who is he? No, you know, he's not a particularly notable name. Now, as I said earlier, this has been a year of stories ending, leaving room for stories to begin. And so I think that there's a good chance that 2018's Fighter of the Year is someone who isn't on our radar yet.
That's fair.
However, I think that both Charlos are going to have an interesting year.
Oh, love that pick.
So watch that space. Hopefully develops interestingly. And I also think that there's a chance for AJ to do some good stuff if the right people and the right fights get made. So I think that there's a chance that he'll, because everyone sees him. You know, when someone is an up and coming prospect and they don't get Fighter of the Year, they don't get pound for pound consideration. Just everyone knows that they're a good up and comer. he's ready to start making the step into I'm a pound for pound excellent, you know, one of the best fighters going. And if he beats the right people, that conversation can happen. So maybe we'll see that conversation unfold.
Yeah, definitely. If he fights, say Wilder, and then
he beats
another
Fury
decent...
and Wilder this year.
Oh, like, if he beats Fury and Wilder, like that's
game over.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but because I have a couple that are very impressive that will be Fighter of the Year next year. So let me go into that. So I'll tell you who is not going to be first. Okay, is not going to be Terrence Crawford. You can't win 3 years in a row. First of all. Second of all, who is he going to fight? He's got Jeff Horn.
He struggles.
And then nobody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he hasn't got natural foils or villains yet to go up against, or people that are in public interest. So there's good fights to be made, but not necessarily popular ones to be made.
At least, if they're not coming over from the PBC side, and I don't necessarily think that they want to send anybody, at least a top name, over to fight Crawford when they could be fighting each other. So it's not going to be Mikey Garcia. As much as I love for it to be Garcia, I think he's in a division where it's transitioning, and he's essentially the best one in the division right now. I don't see him going back to 135. So Mikey is most likely not going to just have the names to suffice a Fighter of the Year award. It won't be Thurman because he needs to fight Spence, and that's not going to happen this year because of Thurman's injury. And it's not going to be Spence because he needs to fight Thurman, and it's not going to happen because Thurman's injury. So those two guys, they're not in contention.
They're on hiatus for contention.
Sure, until they hunt down the Horcruxes, and then maybe they can fight each other. And then, so I'll tell you who my two picks are. One, and this is my prediction, he's winning Fighter of the Year in 2018. You're hearing it right here first. Is Oleksandr Usyk.
Yeah, I think that's very, very possible and probable.
He's going to win the World Boxing Super Series, and in doing that, he'll have beaten the number one rated and number two rated guys at cruiserweight. And these are guys that were rated number one and two prior to the tournament even starting.
Yeah, and for a fairly long time as well.
And that's Marius Bredis, who's very good. He's a very skilled boxer. And I'm guessing Junior Dordikos, or I don't know who's going to win that fight. Most people think that Gassiev is going to win, but I think Dordikos is kind of dangerous. So either way, both guys are extremely good cruiserweights. And without Usyk, any three of these guys would be the number one rated guy in the division. Usyk's going to beat two of the three, and that should make him Fighter of the Year easily. And then my runner-up will be Leo Santa Cruz. So he made the best comeback this year. And then next year, he's got Mares next. And then I'm assuming he'll win. I'm assuming he'll win. And then he'll fight either Frampton again, Gary Russell Jr., or Lee Selby. Possibly he'll fight the winner of Selby versus Frampton. And if he wins that, you know, he's definitely now supplanted, or, you know, basically established himself as the number one guy at featherweight with no questions about it.
Yeah. No, it's interesting picks, but they rely on lots of cogs and wheels going the right way.
Yeah, especially for Santa Cruz. Like, to get those opponents, I think, is going to be harder than winning the fights.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see. Who is going to have the worst year or a bad year in 2018? I have only a couple.
It depends what you mean by bad. I think that David Haye is going to struggle to make a fight and is going to finally piss people off enough that they stop listening when he announces a fight.
Okay, so that's fair.
He's going to have a bad career year, in my opinion. Other than that, it's difficult to pinpoint who is going to struggle the most, I guess. I think probably Jeff Horn.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a good one, actually. He's staring down the barrel of
he's on very
Crawford.
Thin ice, and he's giving a lot of hype to himself, and fair play to him. Most of us would do the same. You've been given a gift, and you're going to cash it in as much as you can. So, you know, no hate to the guy, but his days are very much numbered.
Yeah, that's, I mean, with Terence Crawford as the likely next opponent, whoever that is going to have a bad time.
That's sacrificial at that point.
Yeah, and when you're Jeff Horn and you barely beat Manny Pacquiao in 2017.
Shell of Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao's ghost, you wimped by on a whisper, and a lot of people didn't even think you got it.
Yeah, the remains of Manny Pacquiao do not stand up to 2018 Terence Crawford.
Yeah, so I think that he's in for a hard year.
Yeah, I have a couple others. Another top-ranked fighter, Oscar Valdez. Valdez had two pretty poor performances this year in the Mariaga fight, which was a war. And then
Mariaga's a spoiler, though. I forgive them.
I don't think so. Valdez should have easily won that fight.
And, but that's not how Mariaga is. I put Mariaga in the camp of people like Gamboa and people that like make fights difficult.
Gamboa makes everything difficult.
Well, that's what I mean. I put Mariaga in that category.
I think Valdez but he showed in that fight like he's got a lot of flaws. And if you want to give him credit and say like, well, it's Mariaga, why did he look exactly the same and possibly even worse against Genesis Cervania, a guy who was moving up in weight with no power?
Yeah, you're totally right there. I can't dispute that part.
And unless they give him easier opposition, and I don't know how much easier it can get.
Or for how long you can tread that water.
Yeah, but before people start to turn on him, and I think people, the tide might be turning already, but I think Valdez is due to have a poor year. And then secondly is Carl Frampton. I mean, he's got it tough already.
So I don't know. Why do you think that? I think he's going to do some good stuff.
Well, because he didn't look that great in his fight, in his most recent fight against, was it Gutierrez or Gonzalez? I can't remember who he just fought. I think it was Gutierrez. And then now he's going to fight Donaire, so he's got to avoid a left hook for 12 rounds. That shouldn't be that hard, but Frampton is not untouchable. Then he's going to fight Selby, and Selby's going to make him look horrible because Selby's not going to want to fight. And then at the end of the year, he's either going to fight one of the top featherweights in the world in Santa Cruz or Gary Russell Jr. That doesn't seem to me like an aging Frampton who's struggling and keeps talking about the struggle of making 126 pounds. That doesn't seem like a recipe for success.
Yeah, I'm not all doom and gloom on that front. I think there's a chance that goes well, but it is a good pick. I think it's an interesting pick. I just don't agree.
I mean, I want to be wrong. I definitely do, because I like Frampton and I like Oscar Valdez. These are actually two of the top guys that I, you know, if I have a fave five, they'd be in there.
You've been sweet on Valdez for a while.
I got Valdez in there. I've got Frampton. I've got Gamboa. No, I kicked Gamboa out, actually. I got Campbell. I replaced him with Gamboa with Campbell. So, you know, these are guys that I actually
bit
like
of a
lot.
Pattern there as well, isn't there?
No, actually, I don't see a pattern.
Oh, okay.
British? No, they're not all British.
No.
Two are British. South? No, they're not Southpaws. They're all not that good.
Yeah, there you go. They're all very promising early in their career, and you start to see the wheels come off a bit later on.
I mean, what can I say? I'm a sucker for those kind of fighters. And then, so just a few other ones. I think you'll agree with most of them. And if not, you can tell me. Most unnecessary fight. Stevenson Fanfara 2. What a terrible fight.
Yeah. Fair play that they wanted to cash in, but not the best thing to watch.
Best post-fight joke, Badu Jack, on whether or not he can get a Stevenson fight. I don't know. I think they want to make Stevenson Fanfara trilogy. So you correctly said I should change this from, because I had who was the most underwhelming, what was the most underwhelming performance of the year? And you said David Haye, and I was like, okay, but like David Haye had a torn Achilles. That's not fair. So the most non-injured, able-bodied, underwhelming performance
most
of the
underwhelming
year.
Underwhelming performance from an able-bodied fighter.
And that goes to Demetrius Andrade in his fight with Jack Colquay. Just really poor performance from Andrade. I thought Andrade should have been able to carve Colquay up and do what you see, like, you know, other fighters in that division would have done to him. I mean, just think of what Jermell Charlo would do to Jack Colquay.
Yeah, you know, you're not wrong.
the worst title holder. I think you disagree with this, Terry Flanagan. He fought one time against like somebody that nobody knows. Do you remember who he fought against?
No, not offhand.
Okay. And he was awful in that fight. Like just did just enough. And that followed up like a pretty dismal year the previous year. So it leads me to believe that Terry Flanagan is just the worst title holder in boxing. Now, skill-wise, maybe not. He fought Peter Petrov, and it was just dreadful. And think about what he did in 2016. He fought three times, but he fought Orlando Cruz, Mazen K. Fana. That was a horrible fight. And then Derry Matthews. And he couldn't even stop Derry Matthews. Like, Derry exists to be stopped. He's been stopped nine times in his 12 losses.
Mm-hmm.
He almost has more losses than knockout wins.
You're preaching to the choir. I don't think that it's the strongest pick for weakest title holder.
I didn't really look too far into it, too.
Because you could plumb the depths, is all I'm saying.
Sure. I mean, I could pick on some like random domestic Thai fighter, but I don't want to do that. And then the worst year, again, I'm sorry, British fans, but Ricky Burns. Mm-hmm. He lost to Anthony Crolla, lost to Julius Ndongo. And basically this year just basically showed like you're probably the lower end of the domestic level, like fighting Dirty Derry next kind of level.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think that he's got a kind of cloud of popularity that puts him in fights that are a bit above his station. And so for a while, the conversation's been, is he done? And usually you can't get away with that conversation lasting 3 years, but he has.
Yeah. I do want to point out that we've mentioned Derry Matthews two times now. So let's just mention him a third time.
Which is a record.
If you've not seen his fight with Emiliano Marsili, you have to go see it. It is so good. It's from 2012. Dirty Derry versus Emiliano Marsili. And Emiliano Marsili, who is that guy? He's literally...
That's a high-value recommendation on the 2018 New Year's podcast. Is go and see a Derry Matthews fight from 6 years ago.
and then the opponent, who is he? Oh, he's only 41-year-old undefeated lightweight contender Emiliano Marsili, who has declined multiple title offers. This guy's been like one of the top lightweight prospects, or not prospects, but contenders in the world since before 2012. Because he was, you know, back then he was like 30-0 or something.
Yeah,
and
he's protecting his O, but he thinks the O is from titles held.
And that fight with Matthews was literally the one time he's left fighting in Italy. So that was definitely worthwhile. Let's talk about some of the storylines that I have for 2018. My first one is, and I this is actually part of an article I'm writing, so I didn't warn you about this one, Simon. But this is just
always my favorite, the impromptu difficult question that I can't answer.
Oh, there's no questions. It's just, you know, what's your take on this? So I think these are just storylines to watch in 2018. And that is the first one that I have is Billy Joe Saunders. Will he fail? And I think he will, to get a big fight in 2018, because he is going to demand a little too much money than people are comfortable offering him. Plus, the risk that you take when you fight Billy Joe Saunders, because there's certainly the risk that you lose. Of course, there's a risk with every fight, but there's also the risk that nobody wants to ever see you fight again.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And where does he go, really?
I mean, at this point, the only fight you're going to get, at least in the first half of 2018 as a middleweight, is you need to go through the murderer's row of either Jermall Charlo or Danny Jacobs if you want a big fight. And if you don't,
and that doesn't look great.
No, and if not, then I guess he's going to fight Curtis Woodhouse or something.
Mm-hmm. And then there's people that want to see him fight Eubank again, but Eubank's in a different division and tied up, so that's not happening.
Yeah, he's in a freaking tournament.
That's right. So it's like his options are pretty bleak.
And if he moves up in weight, I mean, there are options, sure, but like Saunders is not exactly shredded out, and like,
he's not huge for the division, so it's like some people are skilled but not skilled enough to go up a division and still look good, and I think he might be in that category.
You know what would be a dreadful fight? because there's a lot of rumors that Callum Smith is pulled out of the World Boxing Super Series. But if Callum fought Billy Joe Saunders, Callum's somebody that's looked very disappointing this year, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
Callum is just like, it seems like he peaked with the Rocky Fielding fight and it's been downhill since then. The thing is,
he looked to be the best of the brothers and head and shoulders above the brothers, but maybe the apple hasn't fallen that far from the tree and the shine's starting to wear off. We'll have to kind of watch this space to find out what the truth is, but it's definitely been a difficult year for his supporters to stay as enthusiastic.
I mean, at this point, the best member of the Smith family is Stephen Smith's ear.
I don't know. I don't think you can go cold on Callum overnight, but he's definitely left a lot to be desired.
No, I definitely think that there's hope for him. I mean, what if maybe he's finally starting to struggle? Well, actually, no, I take that back. He's 27 years old. I keep thinking that Callum is just this 23-year-old rookie or something.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll move on. I think one of the big storylines of 2018 is going to be the rise of Regis Progre. If you don't know who Progre is probably at this point the top American prospect in boxing. And he has looked sensational, but the problem, and despite, you know, we made a big deal about the fact that there's a lot of openings in all the divisions and a lot of the top guys have either lost or retired and there's, you know, space for these young guys to come up. Well, Progre doesn't have that because he's coming up in a division where Mikey Garcia is saying that this is his division now. And if Progre wants to ascend to the top, the path is he's got one of the toughest paths in all of boxing and that he has to go through Mikey Garcia. But if you haven't seen Progre fight, I mean, he fought one of the top prospects.
The thing is, while I agree with this, your track record would lead me to think that he's going to look interesting and then the wheels will fall off.
That's not true. That's only one of the fighters that I like. I never said I liked Progre.
Is that the touch of death when you like them?
Yeah, when I like them.
Fair enough.
Like, I liked Callum too, but now I don't. So now, Callum, you're free to be successful. I'm not like the biggest fan of Progre. Like, I'm not going to deny when I see a guy who looks talented. There are certainly guys that I'm not really a fan of that are talented. Like, I'm not a fan of Billy Joe Saunders. I never have been, but he's extremely skilled. Yeah. No doubt about it. And Progre skilled, not the biggest fan. His knockout of Joel Diaz Jr. was awesome earlier in the year. So that's something to watch. I think one of the for us in America, and that includes you, Simon, Mr. Texan, Mr. 65 degrees outside and you have a sweater on.
Yeehaw.
Will we see a pay-per-view outside of a Canelo fight?
What do you mean?
Like, well, last year we had several pay-per-views. Yeah. Will there be a pay-per-view that does not have Canelo in it? Yes. Do we have the stars to necessitate or to warrant a pay-per-view event excluding Canelo?
I think Wilder AJ happens towards the end of the year.
And you think that's on pay-per-view?
I do, yeah.
I would love that. I mean, I think that's worthy and deserving of being on pay-per-view, but it has to be happen here in Vegas.
That's what I mean. So AJ's career earnings are great. Already, he's earned more than most people can dream to in boxing. And he would earn more fighting Wilder at Wembley. However, if they ever want to crack America, and you know Eddie's trying to do that, then a big marquee event like a Klitschko-AJ-style fight happening in Vegas on American networks with the right HBO-style hype machine behind it to really get the public in, that could be a huge gateway into the American market. And so whilst he could earn more doing it in England, I think that his future earnings, there's a good risk-reward possibility of it going well in Vegas.
I don't think he earns more at Wembley than he does in Vegas. I think there's a reason why Floyd I think there's a reason why Floyd never fought outside of Vegas, and that's because
Floyd's based in Vegas and his like fan base and career works that way. If one day you think that AJ could earn more in Vegas than England, then I can see that, but on this first fight it needs to crossover, and he's not going to do that straight out the gate, I don't think.
No, I think this fight will always make more in Vegas. I mean, they're going to be charging $8,000 for tickets on the floor. It's going to be insane how expensive this is going to be.
I just don't reckon.
And I think that you get paid more off of pay-per-view here than you do in the UK, just because we've got more people in our country to order, and we charge a hell of a lot more.
That's true. It's frustrating at times, but I think
Salam Ali watch this fight $100.
Yeah. Yeah, no, pricing-wise, it's more difficult to be a fan in the States than it is in the UK, and I can say that with experience.
Yeah, it's not that fun not having Box Nation, is it?
I it's so bad.
I think
Saddam Ali will be in an underwhelming pay-per-view against someone that shouldn't really make pay-per-view but does.
Keith Thurman's performance against Jesse Vargas is one of the most important stories of 2018. Keith Thurman right now is the number one guy at welterweight. And for, you know, just as an academic conversation, he is the champion at welterweight. Nobody's done what he's done, okay? But that elbow injury was serious. If you saw the pictures of him post-surgery and stuff, I think that is, like, Thurman's career, if he doesn't come back, if it doesn't heal properly and he doesn't come back, if he comes back a little too early, is basically in jeopardy.
Mm.
And thus, the excitement of the welterweight division, because Thurman makes for great fights. And so
yeah, that's true.
It's going to be extremely important that he looks fantastic in that fight with Jesse Vargas, because even if he looks just good and he needs more time, then it's more time that him and Spence won't fight each other. And so it's important, I think, and hopefully I hope to see Thurman at full strength, ready to go against Jesse Vargas.
You think that he holds the keys to the division's future and unlocking a post-Mayweather-Pacquiao welterweight era?
Yeah, because think of it this way. If Thurman doesn't do too well, or he has this built-in excuse called my elbow, nobody gets the rub beating him. And it's kind of like what Pacquiao fans tried to do to Floyd after the fact by saying, well, my shoulder was injured.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you didn't beat me at my best, so then Floyd doesn't get the full credit. But Thurman's not that guy. Thurman's the guy, kind of guy that's not going to come in and say, I was injured. He's going to come in and he's swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
And what I love about Thurman is that he's the kind of guy that he knows that I might lose, I might get knocked out, but I am not going to get in there and defend against getting knocked out. I'm going to try to knock you out at the very least if I know I'm losing. And so Thurman is the most exciting guy at welterweight, and he definitely, I mean, yes, you could say Spence is exciting as well, but Spence is a lot more methodical and responsible in the ring than Thurman is. And you just look at the first round of the Garcia fight with Thurman. That's a guy that's like, I don't care what you got in your left hook, I'm going to show you mine. I don't think Spence comes out that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
Another storyline, this is a more obscure one, but Manny Robles' future as one of the top trainers in the sport, his fighters have not done so well. Shabransky got just destroyed by Kovalev. Valdez keeps looking bad. So Robles, you know, was the trainer of the year last year, and just a very 1 year later, it's a very different story. His future's uncertain. Yes, he does train other fighters, but a guy who once looked like the most promising trainer in the sport now kind of looks a little suspect in us thinking that. But that typically happens with trainers. Remember Virgil Hunter?
It's a bit of a touch of death. When you get trainers aren't as important as a lot of people make them out to be, and so they get this high esteem of like they can make any fighter work, and then it becomes more apparent that actually a lot of the responsibility is on the fighter, and a good coach is good, but it doesn't make the fighter.
Let's see. Which recently retired fighter will go back on their word in 2018? I didn't really think about answering this question. I just asked it. It's an interesting storyline, I think, because inevitably someone's coming back. I think the most obvious one is Salido.
Pacquiao retired?
No.
Maybe Klitschko?
I would say Salido, but he was arrested last night in a physical altercation at a bar in downtown Sonora, so it looks like he's preparing to get back in the ring. And last one, can Freddie Roach rebound with no stars in his stable? I think with Cotto gone, Pacquiao seemingly gone, what is he going to do? Like, he doesn't have any more stars. Can you think of one? Lebedev, maybe? The only one I can think of is George St. Pierre, but that's not the same sport. Those are the top storylines I can think of. I mean, I have more, but those are for the article that I'm working on. So that's those are the things to look forward to, I think, next year.
On articles, how has the site been maturing this year? What's been new?
Well, we've added more writers. We've added different types of articles, a lot more opinion pieces. The site's growing. The podcast is actually growing, which I'm surprised at. I you know, when we started the podcast, I never thought that we'd have more than like maybe 100 listeners. And for the longest time, because I just uploaded them to Amazon and they would just post the links. And then I had a feed thing that just found the MP3s and then sent that to iTunes. I never had statistics of the podcast.
Yeah.
And now we switched the services. I found a service that does all this. The listenership is way bigger than I ever thought it would be. Like, just astounding. And I didn't even realize that people like the podcast, for one. And two, so many people listen to it. The calendar is like wildly popular, which it should be. That's the only thing I'm like not shocked by, is the calendar is awesome. And so everything is like growing. We get to cover
fights. What is the calendar for those that haven't got it already?
The calendar is, well, it's a calendar that syncs to your phone. And what I do is I personally update it myself. So I put in all the televised fights across the major TV networks. So that includes the networks in the UK. Basically, if you can stream it, it's going to be in the calendar. In addition to that, I also put in world title fights. So some fights don't get televised, but they do happen. And at the very least, you know by seeing the thing in your phone pop up, oh, I should go check who won that fight. Or, huh, I wonder if I could find a stream of this obscure fight, you know, that's happening in South Africa or whatever.
While I was in England, it was easier to just check Sky or check Box Nation for what was happening on the weekend, and you'd basically get a pickup of everything. But in the US, the calendar's been really useful to me for knowing what station things are going to be on, because there's just a billion TV channels here, and none of them seem to dominate boxing exclusively. And so the calendar's really useful for me, where it's like, this is going to be on Fox Sports 1, this is going to be on ESPN, or, you know, just to get a good bearing of where the hell I should start looking.
Yeah, and it converts the time to whatever time zone you're in. So like when I was in China, the time is obviously very different. And I was getting the notifications for when the fights were coming on. And it was just like, oh, well, thank you for waking me up at 4:30 in the morning. I think I'll sleep instead of watch 4 hours of AJ undercard. I don't think I even got to watch the fight, though. But there were a lot of things I didn't get to watch in China.
But yeah, it's useful. So what's on the horizon for the site? Have you got some things lined up for this year?
Well, world domination, to summarize. But what we want to do is, I mean, the past few weeks in Discord and in the chat, I've just kind of been observing for what people want. You know, some people just say it outright, like, you guys need to do this. And then some others are talking about like, well, I wish somebody did this. But what we're planning on is like additions to the site were like little tools, like well, the calendar integration in the sidebar, a tool to look up fighters. I don't know how to say this, but maybe I should not say anything, because I don't want to. It's not done or even fully planned out yet, and I don't want people to say like, "Well, you said you're going to do this. Why isn't this there?"
Build the expectation, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's important to listen to people. Sometimes people will suggest things that other sites have already got locked down or that don't really fit the vibe of Sunday Puncher. But I think it's important to be different and stand out. So I guess some things people suggest, it's like, that's actually already a thing elsewhere and they're doing a good enough job not to worry about doing it. But sometimes there's really interesting new takes as well.
More ranking stuff. People want to see rankings, and I'm working on that right now. More rankings. More. I think we're switching the way articles. We're doing some articles. I mean, I'd love to do more. There's just not enough time. But more articles where like they're shorter. But
yeah, you don't want to just pump out garbage for the sake of it. You want it to be something that you're proud of.
Yeah, I mean, we're not Bleacher Report. and then one of the things that, if you know what I'm talking about, this would be very cool. But seeing if we can build a boxing API that we can have a lot of other sites use, so that, you know, BoxRec is without a doubt the place you go to for information. But if you want to build your own tool, there's no way really to easily get data off of that site. So
that's their bread and butter. They don't want you to have it.
Yeah. So there's got to be some way we can come up with something to make it easier. Like maybe even have the calendar be something that people can use. So you can put the calendar on your site or
data scrape it. Yeah.
Something like that. We're trying to come up with a bunch of ideas to stand out but not only that, but like the goal has always been make it easier for people to follow the sport, to understand it, to learn about the sport, form your own opinions. You don't need ours. And
that's so important though, is it's difficult to be a fan. It's probably one of the sports that you have to work hardest at to stay relevant and up to date with all of the stuff that's happening, because it's on so many networks in so many countries with so many belts, so many fighters, like there's different networks, promotional stables. It's so diffused, and that leads to some great action and excitement, but it also leads to some frustration. So a tool to help navigate that frustration is definitely helpful.
Yeah, so that's basically it. I mean, one of the things that is not going to happen, I don't think, is like, I mean, I'd love to, is just writing the previews every week, which has always been one of the most popular parts of the site, but it just takes so much work. And I always like battle with like, should I do it or should I not? And if I do it, the last few times I've done it, it hasn't just been what I want, which is, but then again, what we run into is like, do people really want to read a 4,000 word article? I don't know. I don't think so. The stats say no. Does that say that people don't read it? And so the calendar kind of replaced the previews, because while the calendar doesn't cover the smaller fights, it does cover the big fights. And I think that's part of what people use.
They serve different purposes though. Like the calendar is just what fights are happening. What names do I recognize that I'm interested in? Whereas the previews have always been about what can I get excited about, and they're there to maybe tell you about a fighter that you weren't interested in to make you interested in them, and they serve more as an advert to get you hyped about something than just informational.
Yeah, which is what I like to do. Like,
yeah,
I like to, you know, figure out a way to make people interested in fights that otherwise are not worth their time. Like, you know, I like to say that I'm the best promoter in the sport, but nobody knows it because I can sell you any fight.
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure watching the site develop and the little community form around it. So, and it's been a privilege being on the podcast. So thank you for that.
And I know you don't like to come in the chat, but like the chat is awesome.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad to hear it.
Simon is not a fan of the chat. Why aren't you a fan of the chat?
Oh, it's just I like to pay attention to stuff, and it's just too much. It's just too thick, too fast.
No, that's not why you're not a fan.
It's why I'm saying.
Simon doesn't want to say why he really isn't a fan, but you'd have to join to find out. Simon doesn't like getting baptized.
Yeah, that's right.
So thanks for coming on. You will be on more often. I'm looking forward to pairing you up with Gleb on a podcast to see how you two interact.
Yeah, bring it on.
You know Gleb?
Yeah.
Jason was not a fan of Gleb. He called me afterwards and was like, what is this guy's problem?
In tears.
Yes, in tears.
But no. You know my details. Have me on if people like listening to me. I'll always pop up.
We'll record from the delivery room as well.
Yeah, I'm getting it mic'd up at the moment.
All right. Well, that's it. That's it for this week's episode. We'll probably have another one, actually. I will have Gleb on, and we're just going to recap for like 20 minutes or so the Japanese fights. And if you can stay awake for that, then, you know, you're a real boxing fan. Thanks for listening.
Very much. Jermell, congratulations. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the fight, but first, there's been an incident here. Did you see what happened?
Yeah, I actually saw it. They threw a chair at my brother, you know. It's not our fault that we get out in the gym and we work hard, we train hard, and we believe in ourselves.
Told you. Are you okay?
I'm good. Is he okay?
Let's talk about the fight now.
Is you okay?
Let's talk about the fight now.
Let's talk.
Okay.
Let's talk.
It was much quicker.
They was giving him a lot of attention, running around with cameras. They was all this other BS and all that. I was quiet the whole time. Hey, coach, tell him read your shirt, coach. Oh, yeah, read your shirt.
Keep running your mouth. Okay. Well, you had the final say here, but it got pretty personal even at the press conference, didn't it?
That's not my fault. I was cool. I was chilling. They said they was gonna come and take my title, something that I put my life on the line for, something that my kid loved. I had to defend it.
All right, let's take a look now at the knockout. Tell us what's happening here, Jermell.
Right uppercut.
Let's take one more look at it. And did you see that he was susceptible to this immediately?
I didn't even hear you, sorry. It was a right uppercut. It looked like it could have been a right hook. He was dipping down, he ran right into the shot.
All right, well, this was over very quickly. Now you have the Laura fight. Mm-hmm. We just saw Herd. Would you like to fight one of those two next?
Give me a title. Give me another title. Let's go. That's
which,
what I need.
Which one? Which one?
I want Herd. Herd just fought. He just won. Austin Chopper did a hell of a job. He stood in there. Give me Herd. I want Herd. Come out that locker room.
All right.